That was a nice shot. Welcome. You're taking Dead Aim with Charlie Nance. Taking Dead Aim is sponsored by RBC Wealth Management and by Ortho Carolina. Now, here's the host of Taking Dead Aim, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we are taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660, presented by RBC Wealth Management and powered by Ortho Carolina. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. In reality, there are two big stories in the world of golf this week on opposite sides of the country. The PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando, where any and every golf vendor shows their wares for the new year, and some guy named Tiger making his official return to the PGA Tour in competition at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines just outside San Diego. We'll talk to Ron Green Jr. from there and cover the merchandise show on a couple of levels with the Golf Channel's equipment insider, Matt Adams. And we begin with our old friend, Sirius XM and PGA Tour Radio's Taylor Zarzer. I've had someone describe the PGA merchandise show like this. Imagine all Santa and his elves make is golf stuff. Now imagine walking into his vast workshop on Christmas Eve after everything has been made and it's brand new.
That's pretty accurate. It's every single manufacturer known to man, and all of the ones that are unknown are also there. And, yeah, I mean, you're trying to decide what you need to put in your bag and what needs to be part of your golf game. I mean, people clearly will spend tens of thousands of dollars to play better golf and shoot better scores, and they will spare no expense when they go to a place like that. Demo Day at Orange County National, that golf course down in Orlando, is a 400-yard radius, circular driving range, where literally it's 400 yards across from every single point. And so you have every single manufacturer, and in that case, you only have really the ones of significance, I guess, but every single one that's significant is out there with all their new equipment. And then the merchandise show is in Orange County Convention Center, and it takes place on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday primarily. I don't know that half of the companies that are in that building are going to be in business again the following year, but that's their shot. I mean, if you've been to, you know, a boat or an RV show or any kind of show, I guess, that's similar, you understand, a kind of an idea of what it's like. But for golfers, yeah, it's paradise. And if you're a club professional or if you're associated with the game of golf in any sort of way, you're down there trying to figure out what you have to have in your pro shop or what you have to have in your store in order that your customers will like. So it is. It's crazy. The first word I would use is overwhelming. To try to figure out where you need to go and what you need to have, it takes days, at least for me, to do that every year.
That's what I was going to ask you, because in terms of just size, I'm not saying that Charlotte's Convention Center is small by any means, because it's not a small convention center. But the Orange County Convention Center, the only thing that rivals it to me is the convention center out in Vegas in terms of just sheer square footage. And overwhelming is a great word for it. When you walk in, how many days does it take for you to go through the whole thing? Because I can't imagine. I think I'd stand there for 10 minutes, go, okay, which way do I go first?
Yeah, it would take, I think it would take at least 2 days for you without having any conversations to really go through there. And that's, you know, for given what I'm doing for a living, that's impossible, you know, because I'm going to stop and I'm going to see 50 people within a 30-minute span that I haven't seen in a while and catch up with them. And so it's almost, and then if I have any kind of relationship, and that's the thing, every person in there has more relationships than I have, and they're going to be stopped by someone else that's in the business, and the person that is representing each and every spot in there is going to say, oh, you've got to try this new glove that now can tell you how far you are away you are on every single shot. You've got to try this new Arcos equipment that is got a sensor on every single club. You need to have these sensors on every single club so that it'll store your information on every shot that you have. Sorry about my dog there. Now there's all kinds of new swing oil and swing fuel and drinks you know, that you must have in order to play better golf. And as it is, it's wild just to go through every single spot in there. But no, I think that it would take a couple of days to do it right.
Taylor Zarzur is with PGA Tour Radio and Sirius XM. He's our guest taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660. You mentioned Arcos and some other things. In the past several years, and I'd say by several, I mean five or so, customization and personalization in terms of weighting and shafts and lofts and being able to control those things has been sort of the innovation du jour. What is the innovation that you're seeing more commonly this year at the merchandise show?
Having everybody now has obviously a Bushnell rangefinder, or they have some sort of rangefinder, and I think that now the thing to have is either a watch or a glove or something that can tell you your yardage, and you can have it either on your phone or on your watch or on your glove. That seems to be new technology. I mentioned the glove, and the name escapes me now, but Johnny Miller is behind it, and I've gotten to know Johnny quite well. I never imagined in my life, Charlie, that I'd be in a situation where Johnny Miller is waiting for me to go to commercial break so he can say, please come over when you're done with this show and please come see this glove that I have that I'm now invested in. And that seems to be the new technology. It's just everyone wants to be able to know how far away they are on every shot and how far they're hitting every single shot. And I do think there is definitely a demand for that. The way that you're able to unveil that, I think, is obviously the challenge. And many of these companies that are trying to get into this are going to probably struggle making sure that they distribute it the right way. You know, you want technology that tells you how far you hit a shot when you're on the driving range and on the golf course. And you also want to have technology that tells you how far away you are on every single shot. So, that seems to be one of the new things that's of real importance. The other is trying to find a way to keep somebody's attention span for 4 or 5 hours. I think that a lot of people associated with the game, the biggest concern that all of us have is how many children are going to fall in love with the game of golf like you did, like I did, because of how hard it is, because of how long it takes, because of the patience level and the attention span of people nowadays. And that's not a criticism. I think anybody that had the kind of technology that children today have, if we had that 30 years or 40 or 50 years ago, chances are we'd have the same attention span and patience level that today's children have. But that doesn't seem to jive with the game of golf, because it takes a tremendous amount of perseverance and discipline and patience. And that is by far the biggest challenge that the game has. So trying to find a way to keep everyone that wants to be introduced to the game entertained and keeping their attention span for the entire time they're at the golf course, whether that's by music or ancillary things outside of just hitting shots, that seems to be the huge issue that the game of golf is facing, and a lot of companies are trying their best to find a way to address that so that somebody can really enjoy their experience on a golf course, whether it's for 2.5 hours or 5 hours. And I know that I'm the long-winded answer, but that's what every person down there seems to be charged with nowadays.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because one of the things I was going to ask you along these lines is, with kids coming into the game, let's face it, their whole world is ruled by video games. It's a video game world. And I keep looking each year at a way, when you go and you're fitted for clubs, or even if you go to PGA Tour Superstore and some of these places, that you're able to play imaginary golf on a video screen of Pebble Beach and play your shots. And I keep waiting for that technology to get to a price point where someone can buy it and bring it into their house. And maybe it doesn't bring the kids to the course as often, but if they can go at their own pace and play golf on a golf course, on a video game, making golf swings in the home, maybe then it'll translate and they can take it out. Is there something like that happening? You know, maybe a more affordable TrackMan system or something.
Right. I think that what I was telling you about Arcos, ARCCOS, is close to it. This guy, Sal Syed, who's the CEO of the company out of Connecticut, he's he and his investors are doing the best they can to try to do something similar to what you're saying. Now, I would say that they're kind of in the infancy stages of it. You put your cell phone in your pocket, you download this app, you buy these sensors that you put on all your clubs, and you don't look at your cell phone while you're playing out on the course, but once you're done with your round, it is stored every single thing that you've done. Now, the only thing you have to do is if you hit a shot in the water, you have to hit add stroke, take it out of your pocket and hit add stroke. If you pick up a putt inside, 2 feet or a foot or an inch, you have to say that you tapped it in. But I think those are some things that they obviously can address as months and years go on. But it stores information on every shot that you hit. It considers slope. It considers wind. It considers weather. It considers everything that you're addressing as you play the round. And I think as time goes on, if you're able to always look at your phone, which we're doing anyway, and see how far you're hitting every single shot, and really kind of learning about your golf swing on after every single shot, I think that there's a real place for that, especially for people that are beginners that have not been committed to the game of golf for a long time. Topgolf certainly is a place that has been very successful. And for those that don't know what that is, I mean, it's in many places across the country and now the world for that matter, where it's basically you're hitting into it's almost like a bowling alley, an enclosed golf facility where you can hit a bunch of shots, as you're saying, almost like at a video game pace. I think that Arcos is on to something, and whether it's Arcos or another company that tries to copy this to a degree, I think you're going to see someone involved with their phone, being interactive with their phone while they're playing on a golf course, be the wave of the future. That's going to be the way to try to get more and more people out to play the game and introduce others to it as well, because there's no doubt that that's still an issue. While the game of golf is in a better place than it was 5 years ago, it still certainly needs more people playing the game, and it's too expensive for most people that are listening, and that's got to change.
Taylor Zarzers with PGA Tour Radio and Sirius XM, our guest, taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660. So Arcos is a smaller company. I wasn't fully aware of what they've done, but they do have television commercials and whatever running. They're in a better position than some of these other companies. One thing, and you mentioned it briefly at the start about the PGA merchandise show, is for some companies, it's the Field of Dreams. For other companies, it's the beginning of the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. What is the product that you've seen that you went, wow, this is so cool, but there is no way this small company can make it?
Wow, that's a good one. I would say that it's a drink. I won't say their name, but it's a drink that, of course, is going to make you feel better on the golf course and give you more energy and endurance as you're playing for four to four and a half hours. The drink was fine, and it came to just like any other energy drink. But there's just no way. There's just no way you're going to get enough people saying, oh, I must have this kind of aid on the golf course before I play. Gatorade and Powerade are one thing, but to have a kind of drink that is completely associated with the game of golf and is going to give you better energy and allow you to shoot better scores, to me, I don't see how that's going to happen. Maybe 5 years from now I'll be apologizing for what I just said, and they'll turn into billionaires. But if you just think it tastes good and you want to drink it because it's perceived to be good for you, that's one thing. But assuming that this would ever become a mainstream idea and a bunch of us are going to must have this drink when we play, I don't see how that could ever happen.
I was going to say, when you first got started and said that, it makes you feel better when you're on the course, with the way I'm playing, the only thing that's going to make me feel better is vodka when I'm on the course.
Well, that has gone on the golf course.
Get you out of here on this, Taylor. That's small company stuff. The big boys, what's the most talked about thing from the Callaways, Titleist, Pings of the world?
Well, I mean, obviously Tiger committing himself to TaylorMade was the biggest story at the merchandise show.
Does he have a piece of the action on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, David Abeles, who's the president of TaylorMade, we had him on and were able to talk to him at length about it. And it's it's a fascinating situation. TaylorMade's been in real trouble the last couple of years. No secret. They are at least scheduled to part ways with Adidas. We say Adidas, of course, that global company. And who knows, maybe that marriage could be salvaged now that this has happened. There's speculation Tiger's going to buy the company. So, I mean, that was by far the biggest story down there as he's back on the golf course at Torrey Pines. But the M1 and the M2 driver, I make no mistake, Charlie. I mean, you know this good and well. If a lot of people that have no association to the game of golf are going to buy TaylorMade clubs now because Tiger Woods is going to be swinging the TaylorMade clubs. He's going to be using 13 of his 14 clubs, and Scotty Cameron putter that he's had forever is not leaking back, but everything else is going to have TaylorMade on it. And Tiger has brought so many new people to the game of golf, and I just think it's one of the biggest stories in equipment history that he's going to be committed to them. There's all sorts of rumors that Rory McIlroy is going to sign with Callaway in the future when he comes back from his rib injury, that at some point in 2017 you're going to see that happen. And so I think that those are the big stories that we heard about. I personally will tell you that the best driver that I hit on at demo day was the new 917 Titleist driver that Justin Thomas is using these days. I think it's the best driver Titleist has ever made. The new epic Callaway driver was one that everyone wanted to stand in line and hit, which is selling like crazy at the moment. But those are the big that's the big club news. But make no mistake, Tiger and TaylorMade together is by far the biggest story coming out of Orlando.
Of course, I love the shameless plug for the University of Alabama player Justin Thomas by the Alabama boy Taylor Zarzer. Very nice.
Well, he's one of many that's using it right now, but I thought it was important to mention him since he has won three of his last four starts, and he's now ranked eighth in the world. So he has been a friend of us at SiriusXM and been on a lot of our shows recently. And he did tell me to go hit that new driver, and I was a little skeptical compared to the Epic and the new M1, but I have to tell you, I already hit a Titleist driver, and I might have ordered a new 917 driver after what I experienced in Orlando.
From SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, that is Taylor Zarzer. More from the PGA Merchandise Show a little later on. And up next, we head to beautiful La Jolla, California, and Torrey Pines, site of this weekend's Farmers Insurance Open. And from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr. takes dead aim on America's Pulse 1660, powered by Ortho Carolina. We are taking dead aim on America's Pulse 1660, presented by RBC Wealth Management. The Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer's Ron Green Jr. joins us now. And let's talk about your record this year for playing hurt on the job. It's stunning so far. First, road trip to Hawaii, and now you're truly suffering for your soup in La Jolla, California. What, Ronnie, what are we talking about here?
Well, it is a little chilly out here.
So I guess we should start off by just asking a really dumb question. Is there anything interesting happening on tour this week?
Yeah, not much. Just another week in the life out here.
Yeah, on the Tiger Circus scale, and you've been around for all of it, 10 being outrageous and 1 being really kind of quiet, where on the circus scale are we with Tiger this week?
Good question. I would say maybe 6 or 7. It was interesting walking in. I came out Wednesday, and he was playing a pro-am early and then going to do his media session. And I walked in the media room about 30 minutes before he was scheduled to talk, and like, what are all these people doing here? I mean, it was crowded and buzzing and, you know, trying to, not enough seats in the interview room and all that. So it was, that felt familiar. I mean, distantly familiar, but, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm and obviously a lot of people very excited to have him back for a lot of reasons.
How did the pro-am go yesterday from observers? I didn't hear anything.
You know, I think he felt like he played okay. Didn't go at it probably as hard as he could have. It was 42 degrees or something when he teed off shortly after the sun rose. And, you know, he's talking about being a Florida softy now. He doesn't like the cold, and he was wearing pants, rain pants, and 4 layers up top trying to stay warm. So I think it was fine. I don't know that anybody ran out there and paid a whole lot of attention to play-by-play out there. But, I think he's encouraged. I think this 4 weeks and five is a really big step for him. I mean, he's doing it intentionally to see where he is and see if he can play his way back into the rhythm of competitive golf. And, I think all of us hope it happens.
Ron Greenjinger is our guest, taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660. You wrote in the Global Golf Post this week a couple of things, but one thing about Tiger that I found interesting, and I guess it may have come either after the press conference yesterday or maybe after his presser in L.A. Earlier in the week. This is a different Tiger Woods in front of the media in terms of his answers, and I don't want to say arrogance, but maybe his self-confidence than we've seen before.
Yeah, I think he is more forthcoming and sort of, I don't know if you want to say lowering the expectations. But, I mean, yeah, he's, when asked how he expected to play, could he play well enough to win like he did the last time he was fully healthy? Because I don't know. Because this is all unknown to me, that he's sort of wandering. I mean, not wandering, but going through this. And he's got to make sure his back holds up, got to make sure find out where his game is and sort of play himself into the sort of competitive toughness that you have. I think my guess is that's his biggest question going through this is can he get himself to the level of sharpness where, every shot you got to grind over. And, I think you have to build that up too. I think you could probably lose some of that. I think going over 72 holes, you have to learn to sustain it. And, I think it'll all come back to him very quickly. But it's great fun to see him seem to appear so enthusiastic about being back.
Ron, can you make a parallel? I know we hate to compare apples to oranges, but I think of like professional football and you're a running back and you've torn an ACL, which I think is a pretty good analogy to hurting your back in golf. They both are very, very important to what you do. And it takes a full season, 18 months, you hear running backs and receivers saying before they trust it again and they're able to bring themselves to go full out cutting off of that knee again. Do you think that we're going to have a period of time, even though it's been a while, and I don't know where we are with Tiger, but do you think he's going to have to get to a point where he fully trusts his back again to go all at it?
Yeah, I know. My limited experience, I had ACL reconstruction surgery and ending my brief skiing career. And, and I know from my experience, it was a long time before you sort of trusted. But the thing about ACLs, at least from what I've learned, is guys can, if you do the rehab and do the therapy, you can bring it back to where it was or even stronger in some cases. I don't know if that's the case with back situations. I think he's always going to be very conscious of it. And I think probably the warmer the better for him. I mean, it's chilly here in San Diego. I mean, about 60 degrees or high, and so you're wearing layers. And I think the longer he can play without it bothering him, the more comfortable he will get with it, and the more he will never not pay attention to it, but the less he will be sort of afraid of it or uncertain about it.
In a moment of absolute honesty, do you think that he would be satisfied by just making the cut this week and being able to play 72 holes in competition and walk away without pain?
Yeah, I think, as he's always said, when he comes to a golf tournament, his goal is to win. That's what he comes for. But I think the reality is this is sort of going up the first half of the bridge and trying to just get back into it. I think deep down, if he can make the cut and if he can play well, and he's going to have some mistakes and hit some scruffy shots probably, but to feel like he can get himself into contention, that's what he's talking about on Wednesday. I just want to put myself in a position to where I have a chance on the weekend. I think if he could get there, that's a very encouraging first step. Now, if he goes out and shoots 78 and, gone by Friday, could be rush hour traffic Friday, well, then that's that's not cause for alarm, but I think it would just be a sort of a statement on where he is at this moment. But, there's a lot of uncertainty, but there's instead of anxiety, now there's more excitement surrounding that uncertainty.
One more thing about Tiger, as we're recording this, he's about to play his opening round on Thursday. His group is with Jason Day, the number one player in the world, even though Day's been sort of fighting injury and trying to find his way this first part of the season, and Dustin Johnson, who's playing like the number one player in the world. He had like his C, D, or E game last week in Abu Dhabi and damn near won the tournament. But I was looking at driving statistics. The average driving on the PGA Tour right now, the average is 292. And I figure Tiger at his best right now with his back the way it is, he may be able to squeak one or two over 300, but he's going to be somewhere in that 285, 295 range. Dustin Johnson is averaging 320 yards off the tee. 320. And he's fairly accurate with it. Talk about a measuring barometer for Tiger Woods. Jason, you know, Day gets it out there too. I'll be curious to watch him in a grouping where he is in the unique position of pretty much always hitting first and how psychologically he handles that.
Yeah, well, he was asked that question specifically, will you try to keep up with them playing with those two guys? And his answer was, oh, hell no, and just sort of laughed. You know, you know, he said he went back and did the research. His first year on tour, I want to say he averaged 297 or 295, and he was second in driving distance behind John Daly. And, you know, now, you know, if you hit at 295, you're just getting lapped. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he can still move it out there. He can, I mean, he hit it pretty far down at the Bahamas. It can, when he wants to, it can get out there. But yeah, he can't, you know, there's no expectation he's going to hit it like those guys do. Now, here, as wet as it is with all the rain they've gotten, the ball's not going to go anywhere. So you're playing long golf courses and no real roll. So that's going to add to it. But yeah, I think he's fully prepared. And I'm sure there's going to be times where he's going to want to give it a little something extra and see what he can do with it. But I think, you know, he has talked about it more than once, talked about it at the Bahamas and talked about it here. There are different ways to shoot low scores. It's still about the final numbers, not about a, it's not a long drive contest. It's about what you shoot. And so I think he's enthusiastic about that part.
Is it possible that in this, the last act of his career, is it possible that Tiger Woods could actually, the great Odysseus, could perhaps become a sympathetic figure?
I think people, you know, some people are never going to be fancy. It's just cut and dried, and it's not going to change. But I think there, you know, he has age has softened him a little bit. I think and softened some people. I mean, the people who don't like him probably look at him and think, well, okay, see, this sort of humbled him, blah blah blah. But you know, I mean, what's not to pull for? I mean, we've had a chance to watch the guy who's played golf better than anybody in history play, and now he's coming back. And, I mean, I don't see any downside. I think, as he said a year ago, whatever happens from here is gravy. Well, I mean, there could be a lot of good gravy still left here. So, you know, I think people – I think the television ratings this weekend, if he is on the at least on the edge of contention, that'll tell the story about how much people care about him, because I think they're going to really, really jump.
Oh, well, it also helps there's no football. I mean, it's sort of a perfect storm. If Tiger makes the weekend without football being on TV, the number should be big for this golf tournament.
Absolutely. And this, you know, to a lot of people, this sort of feels like the start of the season in a way. I mean, beyond Hawaii and Palm Springs, this is when you get a lot of the big players and the California swing really sort of gets its momentum. So, you know, we're off and running. I mean, you got Phoenix coming up, you got Pebble Beach, you got L.A., all that. This is we're off and running, and when you add him to the mix, you got Phil, you got DJ and Jason Day. I mean, this is a good time. We're ready for it, I think.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest, taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660. Another piece that you wrote, and it was so funny because I had just tweeted this out like a day before, and then I read your article. I'm like, I'm channeling Ron Green. I'm no longer impressed by 59 anymore. Don't even bother shooting it. 59 is apparently the new 63 on the PGA Tour, Ron.
But it certainly felt that way. I mean, it is still sort of the magic number. Phil Mickelson was asked about it. And he said, yeah, I mean, I want to do it. I haven't done it. He goes, and, you know, but, I mean, it was so unthinkable for all those years, and now it's happened three times in whatever, six, 7 months. And now, granted, guys did it, you know, in Honolulu and then at Palm Springs on gettable golf courses that aren't terribly demanding with perfect, I mean, ideal conditions, no wind, and they were as vulnerable as could be, still doing it, ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, when Adam Hadwin added his name to the list last week. It's like, geez, another one? I mean, I just realized every week we were, or every day almost, at Sony.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I want to quote this paragraph from you because this will drive it home. Not just shooting it, but how close everyone else is coming to shooting it. At the Sony Open, Thomas shot 59 on Thursday. Kevin Kisner had a putt for 59 on Saturday. And Ches Reavy was on pace to shoot 59 until a late bogey. Zach Johnson's second round 61 seemed almost mundane. A 61 mundane.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's just like, is that the best you could do, man? So, you know, when you get into those, now that's going to be very different here. I mean, Torrey Pines is going to, that's going to be the reality setting back in. Suddenly you're looking at 7,500-yard golf course with damp fairways and, you know, not going to be any low 60s here. Jay Monahan, the commissioner, was asked about it. Is he worried about it? He says, no, I think it's great for the game. He goes, but I really don't think we have to worry about it right now. So, and I think it's different. But, you know, I mean, it does get people talking about it, and it's a magnificent achievement. I mean, 13 under par, however you shoot, it's 13 under par. And I guess the next barrier, nobody shot 14 under par. So who knows?
Well, is Furyk,
weekends we could be talking about it.
Is Furyk walking around in a T-shirt that says, is 59 the best you can do? I would be.
That's a good one.
You were talking about the next threshold being 14 under. I think the next threshold, and I really believe we're going to see it this year, Ron, the magic number in major championships is 62. No one has ever shot it. And with these scores being this low, it would not surprise me if it's threatened in the first couple of days at Augusta if they have ideal weather conditions. And it certainly, with Rory having shot, what, 62 and 61 at Quail, although it was a different golf course, that's got to be in play at the PGA.
Yeah, and so much of it will depend on weather conditions at Augusta. I mean, Nick Price, other guys have shot 63. And if you catch it on the right day, yeah, I mean, you can, you know, because you can make some eagles out there, it comes into play. I mean, look at how close Phil came to shooting 62 at Troon last year. And so, yeah, I think that's the next one. Could it fall this year? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think any of us know quite what to expect at Erin Hills. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't – the numbers Rory has shot at Quail Hollow, I never in my life imagined would be shot. But it just speaks to how good they are. And, you know, the PGA, it's going to be hot. The ball's going to be going forever. It'll be a different golf course than they played before. But the PGA's never been afraid to let guys make birdies, too. So, yeah, that's be a lot I think the possibility of it happening is pretty good this year.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr. And when we return, it's back to the PGA Merchandise Show as the Golf Channel's equipment insider, Matt Adams, takes Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660, powered by Ortho Carolina. We're taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660, presented by RBC Wealth Management. Golf Channel equipment insider Matt Adams is with us. And Matt, would you be more inclined to describe the PGA Merchandise Show as the field of dreams for everyone who loves golf, or the beginning of the boulevard of broken dreams for golf companies?
What's up, Charlie? It's a little bit of both, because I've always likened the – this is my 27th consecutive PGA show.
Oh, my
God. I've seen a lot of them come and go, and a lot of those companies that you're referencing there, too, alluding to come and go as well. But the thing is that the biggest commodity bought and sold in that over 1 million square feet of space in the Orange County Convention Center at the PGA Merchandise Show is hope. They all hope that they're going to have the product that will light the game on fire and sell through, no matter what size company, sell through in your golf shop, right down to the littlest booth, maybe a 10 by 10 or whatever their actual measurement is, the mom and pops that have, you know, some new tee that they designed and what have you. And I mean, it's part of the game, and where those 1,000 vendors are there trying to sell their wares and their hopes and dreams, there'll be another 1,000 next year doing the same thing. That's the beauty of the game. But you know what? That's life. That's reality. That's our society. That's our free market. You know, somebody has an idea, they want to put it out there, and some of them are going to connect and become madly successful, and some of them won't. So it is absolutely both of those, which you asked me.
Matt, the paradigm has changed for the vendors, I would think, drastically in the last 20 years, just because the retail market has contracted so much. Even as late as 10 years ago, I could have named you five or six different companies that had retail stores out and available for everyone. It seems like there's only one or two left that aren't mom and pop operations. And so the vendors have sort of had to change their focus, haven't they, from the golfsmiths of the world to, you know, just some Tom, Dick, and Harry who's bought a ticket to come in, right?
No, it's still open only to industry professionals. But here's the deal. This is what's changed. When I was working on the equipment side of the business, that's why I've been going there for so long, because I used to be on that side of the aisle. When I was working on that side of the aisle, we were selling to the Edwin Watts and the Nevada Bobs and the local golf shops. These were what happened was in the history of golf retail was it was all at one time green grass. It was your pro at your golf shop, but he sold everything, clubs, balls, clothing, the whole deal. When the off-course retail shop started, and again, they were led by companies like Edwin Watts and what have you, they developed as a predominant system of distribution. They were such through the 70s, they were through the 80s, and they were through most of the 90s. As we got into the 2000s, it started to shift to these big box stores, and that included, like you said, Golfsmith, it's certainly Dick's is one of them in the mix, Golf Galaxy, et cetera. So that shift has continued. Sports Authority, I mean, I can go on. Modell's, all these different
right.
Big Five out in California, all these big box sporting goods stores where they would have a golf division. So what had happened originally was, you know, you name the company, Titleist or Ping or what have you, they would say, well, I'm only going to sell to the Green Grass Pro. And then all of a sudden, these off-course retail shops were really good shops. Do you think they're not going to sell to Edwin Watts? And they go, okay, we're going to sell to Edwin Watts now. And then all of a sudden, these big box sporting goods stores started to do a heck of a lot of business when otherwise business seemed to be contracting through various sectors of the golf business. And the company said, you know what, it's a matter of survival. Now I'm going to sell to them. So each time they shift the primary system to distribution, one of the animals at the back of the herd gets eaten by the competition. And that's what's happened over the years in the golf industry. So it's been shifting when it comes from a consumer level, the golfers. The golfers, that pie hasn't really changed all that much. It's an 80-20 rule, 20% by 80% of the product. It's just they're getting it in different ways than what they used to get. That's the interesting thing. It's fascinating, really.
Matt Adams is the equipment insider with the Golf Channel. He's our guest taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660. Matt, there's been an emphasis in the last 5 to 10 years in terms of personal customization of golf yeah. clubs, where you can adjust weights and loft and shaft and everything on your own. Yeah. Without having to order it. That's been, to me, the innovation du jour. Is that still the innovation du jour, or what have you noticed as a new trend? What is the business leaning towards right now?
What you were just describing is absolutely critical to anybody that wants to buy a golf club. And I'm not telling you that for marketing reasons. I'm not telling you that for upsale reasons. I'm telling you that because the days of walking in buying a suit off the rack where they would crunch up in the back and go, oh, yeah, it fits you fine. You can't do that with golf equipment. Everybody's swing is different. And when you get fit for a piece of equipment, all of a sudden they're going to find out, well, you need a little more loft here, or you need the face to be a little bit open, or you need the face to be a little bit closed, or you need a shaft that has a little bit or a little less torque. You need a shaft that's stiff. You need a shaft that's regular. You need it to be oversized. You need it to be undersized. You need a grip that's standard. You need a grip that's oversized. Whatever it is, all of these variables go in, and it's because every single swing is a snowflake. Every person is different. So if you want to make sure that you're maximizing your swing, and look, most people don't have great golf swings. If you want to make sure that you're maximizing whatever it is you had, mediocre or meager as it may be, you've got to make sure that you're fit into it. So that is absolutely fundamentally critical.
Regardless of whether you think it'll make it or not, what is the one thing that after days of walking around the merchandise show that you went, that's the coolest thing I've seen?
You know, the Epic Driver from Callaway is very, very cool. What they did was, if just think of a metalwood. I'm going to take the hood off the metalwood for you for a second. In that, when a golf ball comes into contact with the face of a club, people don't realize how violent an interaction that is. You've got a ball that's made up of various layers of rubber that's coming into contact with a head that is hollow and made out of titanium. when those two collide at a very high speed, the ball is going to deform and the head is going to deform. Now, that's the part that most people don't realize, because they look at it and they go, this thing's made out of titanium. They make rockets out of this thing. It's not going to deform. What happens is as the face comes into contact with the ball, the crown of the club bows upward and the sole of the club bows downward. It actually, just like if you push your finger into a balloon. So what Callaway did was they took these two titanium rods and they attached it to the roof of the driver on the inside of it and to the sole of the driver, of course, obviously on the inside of it as well. It's the same two rods. So that now when the ball comes into contact with the face, that top crown and that sole cannot deform the way they normally would according to physics. The physics calls it lensing. It's actually called energy lensing. And what that means is that you're redirecting the energy and it comes back out through the face. Now, that doesn't mean the ball is going to come off like a cannon necessarily, but what it does is it gives more force on a mishit shot. If you hit, generally, if you're going to hit an epic driver, although if you get fit for it, you'll hit it more. But if you say you're fit in your last drive and you hit the epic dead in the face, you hit yours dead in the face, I don't think you're going to get a massive amount of distance variance. But most people don't hit the ball dead in the middle of the face. They hit it a little high on the toe, a little low on the heel, or some variance therein. Those shots, which make up the majority of golf shots, will be better struck, will be more corrective in their spin and hitting the target, and will be longer as a result of just that one little piece of technology alone, and that's one of about 10 pieces that are inside this head. Yes, they're all good. All the equipment that's out there from all the premium companies, excellent, but that particular one stood out to me.
Harry Arnett, Callaway Golf, for those last 2.5 minutes, you are welcome. We're taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660 with the Golf Channel Equipment Insider. Matt Adams, you brought up all the technology that goes into the Epic, and it's in all the golf clubs. Are you as surprised as I am? It seems like each year I think, what else can they possibly do? You know, there has to be a critical mass on what you can do with a golf ball, what you can do with a golf club. And seemingly every year they find a better way to build a mousetrap.
Yeah, but a little bit of that, just to be fair, is smoke and mirrors. Because, and I'm not saying that anyone's trying to deceive anybody, but what I mean is when you talk about physics, we're up against the wall in terms of physics, in terms of the ability to maximize a perfectly struck shot. That's what I was just explaining to you, because if you've maxed out the COR, if you've maxed out the moment of inertia, which is stability at the moment of impact between a head and a ball, there's not a heck of a lot more that you can do with a perfectly struck shot. However, again, emphasizing most shots are not perfectly struck, so that the focus right now is what happens when a ball doesn't hit the center of the club face. And that's where they continue to zero in on more and more and more technology and new technology. So when someone comes up and says, hey, this club will give you 20 more yards, if that happened every year that they said that we'd all be hitting at 1,000 yards or more. So the thing to watch for when you're looking at any club, no matter where you go, whatever golf shop you go to or what have you, is I like to advise people is go in brand agnostic. Don't go in with a set idea of what brand you absolutely have to play because your friend plays it or somebody else. Go in there with an open mind, test a lot of different clubs, and then use the club that is best for you instead of you trying to adjust to a club that you think is the one that you have to have. It's probably going to save you some money, to tell you the truth, to do it with that open-minded approach, but you'll definitely get better performance as well, because you'll get a club then that is working to correct wherever your deficiencies lie.
Matt, you're talking about the Epic driver from Callaway. Callaway, of course, one of the big boys. No surprise when there's buzz about something they do.
Yep.
One of the smaller companies, the mom and pops that have the dream right now. What is, and don't mention the company, I don't want that, but what is a product that you've seen that you have gone, this is so cool, but there's no way this company can swim in the water with these sharks and make it?
Well, actually, I saw a club today that, I actually put it on TV, to tell you the truth, but it was out of Asia. It's out of Taiwan, Republic of China, and this thing was is the word blingiest a word? It had so much bling on this thing. It was the paint. It was the finish. It was the hosel. Every piece of this club looked like a piece of jewelry. In fact, when I looked down at it, I'm not sure, but I think it had 3D decals on the top that were like, you know, urethaned into the head. So I look at something like that, and my first thought is, who will buy this thing? I think it was like a $5,000 club. Or
wow.
Free. How good would the performance have to be? How far would you have to hit it? How much money would you have to win off your buddies if you were going to spend $5,000? I don't care how much money you have. If you're going to drop $5,000 on a golf club. So I look at stuff like that and I go, in fact, one of the shafts, you're going to love this too. It had a faux bamboo golf shaft. I am not kidding.
Oh, fantastic.
I don't know how they did it. Yeah, I don't know how they did it. But it, instead of a graphite shaft that looked like graphite, it looked like bamboo. And you know how bamboo kind of comes out a little bit at each
yes.
little section?
Yes.
It even had that. So there are some things that you see at this show that are absolutely bizarre. And those were a couple, that stood out.
Couple of quick questions before we get you out of here. Speaking of expensive golf clubs, I've been fascinated by PXG and their entry into the marketplace in the last 12 to 18 months. I don't know if they are down there or not at the PGA Merchandise Show, but what do you see as the future of that company? That's a very high-end piece of equipment.
It is. It's real technology. That's the first thing I was looking for. Again, you know, I used the phrase before, smoke and mirrors. When I heard they were coming out in PXG, and just like these two clubs I was describing, high end of the marketplace, I'm going, wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, what is going on? So when I actually took a look at the, I'll start with the irons, for example, and the metal woods are similar in terms of their use of customized weight profile. They take a forged club and then they mill out the inside of the cavity, right? It's closed. Just, it's like a mini metal wood. It'd be the best way to describe it. So they mill out the inside of that cavity. And as they mill it out, of course, they're taking metal out, they're taking weight out, and then they have these screw ports that they put back in, which means that they have the ability to customize where they put the weight and how much weight they put in through these little screws so that it perfectly fits, again, the dynamic profile of what you need with your swing. Maybe you got a little bit of toe hang, maybe you close it too quickly, or whatever it is that goes into it. And then they take a super reactive face that they've actually taken in and welded onto the front of the club. And that super reactive face, again, just like I was describing to you before about the way a golf ball reacts off a metal wood, it is a very violent interaction. Well, on an iron, it's on there for a very short period of time as well. It's a little bit longer because of the loft. But when they have a very reactive face, that face is actually going to bow in. When it bows in, the space that was left in there, they have filled that with a polymer. So as it bows in, they've got this polymer in there that helps as much as it possibly can to rocket that ball back off that face again. So they're getting a very high launch. And with an iron, what do you want with the height and distance? Obviously, people, that's the elixir that everybody's always after. But what you want is you want that ball to be able to fly in the air high and long and then come down soft, i.e. on the target that you're aiming at, because of the driver you're hitting to a range. With an iron, you're hitting to a specific place. And so with the technology that I saw on the PXG irons was real. I spoke to Lydia. I bumped into Lydia Ko, and I asked her that question. Here she's number one golfer in the world, right? Well, number one women's golfer in the world. And I said, why? She's like, why? What are you talking about, man? I said, why would you change equipment when you're number one in the world? You're number one. Why would you? She said, I'm always searching for something better. My friends were playing the PXG, and when I hit the PXGs, it felt like I was hitting a forged club, but I was getting the forgiveness of a steel cast club, although it's really not either one of those. It's something in between in terms of the technology that it brings to fore and how it's been designed. This is real stuff.
One last thing with Matt Adams, Equipment Insider with the Golf Channel, as we're taking Dead Aim on America's Pulse 1660. The future of the game, and I don't know if there's a magic bean out there, but we're always looking to grow the game in this ADD society to get kids interested in a game that's hard, that takes a while to play. Is there a company out there that's working on something for that, or is there anything they can do for that?
Well, there's a couple different things. First of all, and I've been on this soapbox for this for years, and there's finally some legitimate and significant movement in this regard. And that is that in many ways, we as a golf industry are our own worst enemy. And we allow ourselves to be easily maligned through multiple media, especially in a political year and all that went into it as well with golf. Oh, that's a game for the elitists and all the rest. My problem with golf is that we allow ourselves to be measured by participation. And I look at that and I say, you know, if I said to you right now, Jared, tell me about what are the biggest sports in the USA? And you'd say, oh, the NFL is far and away the biggest in the world. Their fan base is 149 million. NASCAR is 75 million and all the rest. And I'm scratching my head and saying, what are you basing that on? Well, the television ratings and all the rest. How does that compare to golf? Well, golf is 25 million. How are you measuring that? Well, by participation. Really? So that the people that are going into Topgolf, they don't count. The people that are at the range, unless they go to the golf course, they don't count. Your father-in-law that wouldn't miss a golf tournament in his life, and he goes out and buys a shirt and loves it but never gets out to the golf course anymore because of an old injury at work or something, he doesn't count. So we as an industry have to realize how we measure what the golf industry is. If people are consuming the product, if they're listening to your radio show, if they're watching golf on television, all these myriad of ways that people are consuming the game, they all count because all the other sports that golf is compared to use the same metrics to measure their sport. For some reason, we allow ourselves to be measured only by participation. It is insane. So that's point one in terms of helping ourselves in terms of how the game is perceived and all the rest. I think collectively, all of us that are golf fans need to make sure that we stand up and speak to the virtues of what golf is. Do you know that golf last year raised $3.9 billion for charity? No other sport comes close. You can combine all the other major sports together and none of them touch it. And it's not just on the tour level, although the tour deserves great credit for what they do too. I'm talking about what we do in our local communities, people that are involved in every one of the people that are listening to your show right now have played in a charity event that helps some. Maybe someone got injured in an accident. Maybe it was a first responder that got killed or injured and his family put this together or his friends, or maybe it's for a charity like cancer eradication, whatever it is. Everybody is involved in that. There is not another sport in the world that comes close to that. So part of what we need to do in the effort to expand the game and grow the game and reach new audiences is collectively we need to carry these messages forth of who golf really is and not just allow our game to be defined by those that would try to malign us because, you know, they don't like, for example, that we have a president that owns golf facilities or they didn't like that the last president played 300 times in office. Well, what did you want them to do? What would be acceptable that they could do other than this great game that brings people together and provides fitness and fun and families can do together? So it is all those things. To answer your question directly, I like the programs like the PGA Junior League that the PGA of America is doing. This is where kids get together, just like Little League Baseball, and they go out and play as a team in a golf format. Uniforms, all the rest. They've grown in the last year alone, junior participation from 2.5 million to 3 million children being exposed to the game. So there are real and legitimate efforts at play. I just want every golfer in the world to stand up for the sport that we love and stop letting it get dragged to the dirt.
Man, I love talking with smart, passionate people in the game, and you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who wears those hats better than that guy, Golf Channel Equipment Insider Matt Adams. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, our old friend Taylor Zarzer, for their time this week. Weather-wise, crisp but clear if you're inclined to try and tee it up this weekend. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy. And I'll see you right here next week taking dead aim on America's Pulse 1660, presented by RBC Wealth Management and powered by Ortho Carolina.